Majjhima Nikaya, number 12. Maha Sihanada Sutang, The Great Discourse on the Lion's Roar. Translated from the Pali by Bhikkhu Nyanamoli. Edited and revised by Bhikkhu Bodhi. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Vaisali in the grove outside the city to the west. Now on that occasion, Sunakata, son of the Lichavis, had recently left this Dhamma and discipline. He was making this statement before the Vaisali assembly. The recluse Gotama does not have any superhuman states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. The recluse Gotama teaches a Dhamma merely hammered out by reasoning, following his own line of inquiry as it occurs to him. And when he teaches the Dhamma to anyone, it leads him, when he practices it, to the complete destruction of suffering. Then, when it was morning, the Venerable Sariputta dressed, and taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Vaisali for alms. Then he heard Sunakata, son of the Lichavis, making this statement before the Vaisali assembly. When he had wandered for alms in Vaisali and had returned from his alms round, after his meal he went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, he sat down at one side and told the Blessed One what the Sunakata was saying. The Blessed One said, Sariputta, the misguided man Sunakata is angry, and his words are spoken out of anger. Thinking to discredit the Tathagata, he actually praises him. For it is a praise of the Tathagata to say of him, when he teaches the Dhamma to anyone, it leads him, when he practices it, to the complete destruction of suffering. Sariputta, this misguided man Sunakata will never infer of me according to the Dhamma. That Blessed One is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. And he will never infer of me according to Dhamma. That Blessed One enjoys the various kinds of supernormal power. Having been one, he becomes many. Having been many, he becomes one. He appears and vanishes. He goes unhindered through a wall, through an enclosure, through a mountain, as though through space. He dives in and out of the earth as though it were water. He walks on water without sinking as though it were earth. Sitting cross-legged, he travels in space like a bird. With his hand he touches and strokes the moon and sun, so powerful and mighty. He wields bodily mastery, even as far as the Brahma world. And he will never infer of me according to Dhamma. With the divine ear element, which is purified and surpasses the human, that Blessed One hears both kinds of sounds, the heavenly and the human, those that are far as well as near. And he will never infer of me according to Dhamma. That Blessed One encompasses with his own mind the minds of other beings, other persons. He understands a mind affected by lust as affected by lust, and a mind unaffected by lust as unaffected by lust. He understands a mind affected by hate as affected by hate, and a mind unaffected by hate as unaffected by hate. He understands a mind affected by delusion as affected by delusion. and the mind unaffected by delusion, as unaffected by delusion. He understands a contracted mind as contracted, and a distracted mind as distracted. He understands an exalted mind as exalted, and an unexalted mind as unexalted. He understands a surpassed mind as surpassed, and an unsurpassed mind as unsurpassed. He understands a concentrated mind as concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated. He understands a liberated mind as liberated, and an unliberated mind as unliberated. 10 Powers of a Tathagata. Sariputta, the Tathagata has these 10 Tathagata's powers, possessing which he claims the herd leader's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. What are the 10? Here, the Tathagata understands as it actually is, the possible as possible, and the impossible as impossible. And that is a Tathagata's power, that the Tathagata has, by virtue of which he claims the herd leader's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. Again, the Tathagata understands as it actually is the results of actions undertaken past, future, and present, with possibilities and with causes. That too is a Tathagata's power. Again, the Tathagata understands as it actually is the ways leading to all destinations. That too is a Tathagata's power. Again, the Tathagata understands as it actually is the world with its many and different elements. That too is a Tathagata's power. Again, the Tathagata understands as it actually is how beings have different inclinations. That too is a Tathagata's power. Again, the Tathagata understands as it actually is the disposition of the faculties of other beings, other persons. That too is the Tathagata's power. Again, the Tathagata understands as it actually is the defilement, the cleansing, and the emergence in regard to the jhanas, liberations, concentrations, and attainments. That too is the Tathagata's power. Again, the Tathagata recollects his manifold past lives, that is, one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births, many eons of world contraction, many eons of world expansion, many eons of world contraction and expansion. There I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance. Such was my nutriment. Such was my experience of pleasure and pain. Such my life term. And passing away from there, I reappeared elsewhere. And there too I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance. Such was my nutriment, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my life term, and passing away from there, I reappeared here. Thus, with their aspects and particulars, he recollects his manifold past lives. That too is a Tathagata's power. Again, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, the Tathagata sees beings passing away and reappearing, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and he understands how beings pass on according to their actions thus. These worthy beings who were ill-conducted in body, speech, and mind, revilers of noble ones, wrong in their views, giving effect to wrong view in their actions, on the dissolution of the body, after death, have reappeared in a state of deprivation, in a bad destination, in perdition, even in hell. But these worthy beings, who were well conducted in body, speech, and mind, not revilers of noble ones, right in their views, giving effects to right view in their actions, on the dissolution of the body, after death, have reappeared in a good destination, even in the heavenly world. Thus, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, he sees beings passing away and reappearing, inferior and superior, fair and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and he understands how beings pass on according to their actions. That too is a Tathagata's power. Again, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, the Tathagata here and now enters upon and abides in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints. That too is a Tathagata's power, that a Tathagata has, by virtue of which he claims the herd leader's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. The Tathagata has these 10 Tathagata's powers, possessing which he claims the herd leader's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. Sariputta, when I know and see thus, should anyone say of me, the recluse Gotama does not have any superhuman states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. The recluse Gotama teaches a Dhamma merely hammered out by reasoning, following his own line of inquiry as it occurs to him. Unless he abandons that assertion and that state of mind and relinquishes that view, then, as surely as if he had been carried off and put there, he will wind up in hell. Just as a bhikkhu possessed of virtue, concentration, and wisdom would here and now enjoy final knowledge, so it will happen in this case, I say, that unless he abandons that assertion and that state of mind and relinquishes that view, then as surely as if he had been carried off and put there, he will wind up in hell. Four kinds of intrepidity. Sariputta, the Tathagata has these four kinds of intrepidity, possessing which he claims the herd leader's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. What are the four? Here I see no ground on which any recluse or Brahmin or God or Mara or Brahma or anyone at all in the world could, in accordance with the Dhamma, accuse me thus. While you claim full enlightenment, you are not fully enlightened in regard to certain things. And seeing no ground for that, I abide in safety, fearlessness, and intrepidity. I see no ground on which any recluse or anyone at all could accuse me thus. While you claim to have destroyed the taints, these taints are undestroyed by you. And seeing no ground for that, I abide in safety, fearlessness, and intrepidity. I see no ground on which any recluse, or anyone at all, could accuse me thus. Those things called obstructions by you are not able to obstruct one who engages in them. And seeing no ground for that, I abide in safety, fearlessness, and intrepidity. I see no ground on which any recluse, or anyone at all, could accuse me thus. When you teach the Dhamma to someone, it does not lead him, when he practices it, to the complete destruction of suffering. And seeing no ground for that, I abide in safety, fearlessness, and intrepidity. A Tathagata has these four kinds of intrepidity, possessing which he claims the herd leader's place, roars his lion's roar in the assemblies, and sets rolling the wheel of Brahma. Sariputta, when I know and see thus, should anyone say of me those things, he will wind up in hell. The Eight Assemblies. Sariputta, there are these eight assemblies. What are the eight? An assembly of nobles, an assembly of Brahmins, an assembly of householders, an assembly of recluses, an assembly of gods of the heaven of the four great kings, an assembly of gods of the heaven of the 33, an assembly of Mara's retinue, an assembly of Brahmas. Possessing these four kinds of intrepidity, the Tathagata approaches and enters these eight assemblies. I recall having approached many hundred assemblies of nobles, many hundred assemblies of Brahmins, many hundred assemblies of householders, many hundred assemblies of recluses, many hundred assemblies of gods of the heaven of the four great kings, many hundred assemblies of gods of the heaven of the 33, many hundred assemblies of Mara's retinue, many hundred assemblies of Brahmas. And formerly I had sat with them there, and talked with them, and held conversations with them. Yet I see no ground for thinking that fear or timidity might come upon me there. And seeing no ground for that, I abide in safety, fearlessness, and intrepidity. Sariputta, when I know and see thus, should anyone say of me those things, he will wind up in hell. Four kinds of generation. Sariputta, there are these four kinds of generation. What are the four? Egg-born generation, womb-born generation, moisture-born generation, and spontaneous generation. What is egg-born generation? There are these beings born by breaking out of the shell of an egg. This is called egg-born generation. What is womb-born generation? There are these beings born by breaking out from the caul. This is called womb-born generation. What is moisture-born generation? There are these beings born in a rotten fish, in a rotten corpse, in rotten dough, in a cesspit, or in a sewer. This is called moisture-born generation. What is spontaneous generation? There are gods and denizens of hell, and certain human beings, and some beings in the lower worlds. This is called spontaneous generation. These are the four kinds of generation. Sariputta, when I know and see thus, should anyone say of me those things, he will wind up in hell. The five destinations in Nibbana, in brief. Sariputta, there are these five destinations. What are the five? Hell, the animal realm, the realm of ghosts, human beings, and gods. I understand hell and the path and way leading to hell. And I also understand how one who has entered this path will, on the dissolution of the body, after death, reappear in a state of deprivation, in an unhappy destination, in perdition, in hell. I understand the animal realm, and the path and way leading to the animal realm. And I also understand how one who has entered this path will, on the dissolution of the body, after death, reappear in the animal realm. I understand the realm of ghosts, and the path and way leading to the realm of ghosts. And I also understand how one who has entered this path will, on the dissolution of the body, after death, reappear in the realm of ghosts. I understand human beings and the path and way leading to the human world. And I also understand how one who has entered this path will, on the dissolution of the body, after death, reappear among human beings. I understand the gods and the path and way leading to the world of the gods. And I also understand how one who has entered this path will, on the dissolution of the body, after death, reappear in the happy destination, in the heavenly world. I understand Nibbana, and the path and way leading to Nibbana. And I also understand how one who has entered this path will, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, here and now enter upon and abide in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints. The five destinations and Nibbana in detail. By encompassing mind with mind, I understand a certain person thus. This person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path that on the dissolution of the body, after death, he will reappear in a state of deprivation, in an unhappy destination, in perdition, in hell. And then later on, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, I see that on the dissolution of the body, after death, he has reappeared in a state of deprivation, in an unhappy destination, in perdition, in hell, and is experiencing extremely painful, racking, piercing feelings. Suppose there were a charcoal pit deeper than a man's height, full of glowing coals, without flame or smoke, and then a man scorched and exhausted by hot weather, weary, parched, and thirsty, came by a path going in one way only and directed to the same charcoal pit. Then a man with good sight, on seeing him, would say, "This person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path, that he will come to this same charcoal pit." And then later on, he sees that he has fallen into that charcoal pit and is experiencing extremely painful, racking, piercing feelings. So too, by encompassing mind with mind, those events resulting in piercing feelings are seen. By encompassing mind with mind, I understand a certain person thus. This person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path that on the dissolution of the body, after death, he will reappear in the animal realm. And then later on, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, I see that on the dissolution of the body, after death, he has reappeared in the animal realm, and is experiencing painful, racking, piercing feelings. Suppose there were a cesspool deeper than a man's height, full of filth, and then a man scorched and exhausted by hot weather, weary, parched and thirsty, came by a path going in one way only, and directed to that same cesspit. Then the man with good sight, on seeing him, would say, "This person so behaves, that he will come to this same cesspit." And then later on he sees that he has fallen into that cesspit and is experiencing painful, racking, piercing feelings. So too, by encompassing mind with mind, those events resulting in piercing feelings are seen. By encompassing mind with mind, I understand a certain person thus. This person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path that on the dissolution of the body, after death, he will reappear in the realm of ghosts. And then later on, I see that he has reappeared in the realm of ghosts and is experiencing much painful feeling. Suppose there were a tree growing on uneven ground, with scanty foliage, casting a dappled shade, and then a man scorched and exhausted by hot weather, weary, parched and thirsty, came by a path going in one way only, and directed to that same tree. Then the man with good sight, on seeing him, would say, "This person so behaves, that he will come to the same tree." And then later on, he sees that he is sitting or lying in the shade of that tree, experiencing much painful feeling. So too, by encompassing mind with mind, those results leading to much painful feeling are seen. By encompassing mind with mind, I understand a certain person thus. This person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path that on the dissolution of the body, after death, he will reappear among human beings. And then later on, I see that he has reappeared among human beings and is experiencing much pleasant feeling. Suppose there were a tree growing on even ground with thick foliage, casting a deep shade, and then the man scorched and exhausted by hot weather, weary, parched, and thirsty, came by a path going in one way only, and directed to that same tree. Then the man with good sight, on seeing him, would say, "This person so behaves that he will come to the same tree, and then later on he sees that he is sitting or lying in the shade of that tree experiencing much pleasant feeling." So too, by encompassing mind with mind, those events resulting in much pleasant feeling are seen. By encompassing mind with mind, I understand a certain person thus. This person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path that on the dissolution of the body, after death, he will reappear in a happy destination, in the heavenly world. And then later on, I see that he has reappeared in a happy destination in the heavenly world and is experiencing extremely pleasant feelings. Suppose there were a mansion and it had an upper chamber plastered within and without, shut off, secured by bars, with shuttered windows, and in it there was a couch spread with rugs, blankets and sheets, with a deerskin coverlet, with a canopy as well as crimson pillows for both head and feet. And then the man, scorched and exhausted by hot weather, weary, parched and thirsty, came by a path going in one way only and directed to that same mansion. Then the man with good sight, on seeing him, would say, "This person so behaves that he will come to this same mansion." And later on he sees that he is sitting or lying in that upper chamber in that mansion experiencing extremely pleasant feelings. So too, by encompassing mind with mind, those events resulting in extremely pleasant feelings are seen. By encompassing mind with mind, I understand a certain person thus. This person so behaves, so conducts himself, has taken such a path that by realizing it for himself, with direct knowledge, he here and now will enter upon and abide in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints. And then later on, I see that by realizing it for himself, with direct knowledge, he here and now enters upon and abides in the deliverance of mind and deliverance by wisdom that are taintless with the destruction of the taints, and is experiencing extremely pleasant feelings. Suppose there were a pond with clean, agreeable, cool water, transparent, with smooth banks, delightful, and nearby a dense wood. And then the man, scorched and exhausted by hot weather, weary, parched and thirsty, came by a path going in one way only and directed towards that same pond. Then the man with good sight on seeing him would say, "This person so behaves that he will come to the same pond." And then later on he sees that he has plunged into the pond, bathed, drunk and relieved all his distress, fatigue and fever, and has come out again and is sitting or lying in the wood, experiencing extremely pleasant feelings. So too, by encompassing mind with mind, those events resulting in extremely pleasant feelings are seen. These are the five destinations. Sariputta, when I know and see thus, should anyone say of me, "The recluse Gotama does not have any superhuman states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. The recluse Gotama teaches a Dhamma merely hammered out by reasoning, following his own line of inquiry as it occurs to him. Unless he abandons that assertion and that state of mind and relinquishes that view, then, as surely as if he had been carried off and put there, he will wind up in hell. Just as a bhikkhu, possessed of virtue, concentration, and wisdom, would here and now enjoy final knowledge, so it will happen in this case, I say, that unless he abandons that assertion and that state of mind and relinquishes that view, then, as surely as if he had been carried off and put there, he will wind up in hell. The Bodhisattva's Austerities. Sariputta, I recall having lived a holy life, possessing four factors. I have practiced asceticism, the extreme of asceticism. I have practiced coarseness, the extreme of coarseness. I have practiced scrupulousness, the extreme of scrupulousness. I have practiced seclusion, the extreme of seclusion. Such was my asceticism, Sariputta, that I went naked, rejecting conventions, licking my hands, not coming when asked, not stopping when asked. I did not accept food brought or food specially made or an invitation to a meal. I received nothing from a pot, from a bowl, across a threshold, across a stick, across a pestle, from two eating together, from a pregnant woman, from a woman giving suck, from a woman lying with a man, from where food was advertised to be distributed, from where a dog was waiting, from where flies were buzzing. I accepted no fish or meat. I drank no liquor, wine, or fermented brew. I kept to one house, to one morsel. I kept to two houses, to two morsels. I kept to seven houses, to seven morsels. I lived on one saucerful a day, on two saucerfuls a day, on seven saucerfuls a day. I took food once a day, once every 2 days, once every 7 days, and so on up to once every fortnight. I dwelt pursuing the practice of taking food at stated intervals. I was an eater of greens or millet or wild rice or hide parings or moss or rice bran or rice scum or sesame flour or grass or cow dung. I lived on forest roots and fruits. I fed on fallen fruits. I clothed myself in hemp mixed cloth, in shrouds, in refuse rags, in tree bark, in antelope hide, in strips of antelope hide, in kusa grass fabric, in bark fabric, in wood shavings fabric, in head hair wool, in animal wool, in owl's wings. I was one who pulled out hair and beard, pursuing the practice of pulling out hair and beard. I was one who stood continuously, rejecting seats. I was one who squatted continuously, devoted to maintaining the squatting position. I was one who used a mattress of spikes. I made a mattress of spikes my bed. I dwelt pursuing the practice of bathing in water 3 times daily, including the evening. Thus, in such a variety of ways, I dwelt pursuing the practice of tormenting and mortifying the body. Such was my asceticism. Such was my coarseness, Sariputta, that just as the bole of a tinduka tree, accumulating over the years, cakes and flakes off, so too dust and dirt, accumulating over the years, caked off my body and flaked off. It never occurred to me, oh, let me rub this dust and dirt off with my hand, or let another rub this dust and dirt off with his hand. It never occurred to me thus. Such was my coarseness. Such was my scrupulousness, Sariputta, that I was always mindful in stepping forwards and stepping backwards. I was full of pity, even for the beings in a drop of water thus. Let me not hurt the tiny creatures in the crevices of the ground. Such was my scrupulousness. Such was my seclusion, Sariputta, that I would plunge into some forest and dwell there. And when I saw a cowherd or a shepherd, or someone gathering grass or sticks, or a woodsman, I would flee from grove to grove, from thicket to thicket, from hollow to hollow, from hillock to hillock. Why was that? So that they should not see me or I see them. Just as a forest-bred deer, on seeing human beings, flees from grove to grove, from thicket to thicket, from hollow to hollow, from hillock to hillock. So too, when I saw a cowherd or shepherd, such was my seclusion. I would go on all fours to the cow pens when the cattle had gone out and the cowherd had left them, and I would feed on the dung of the young suckling calves. As long as my own excrement and urine lasted, I fed on my own excrement and urine. Such was my great distortion in feeding. I would plunge into some awe-inspiring grove and dwell there, a grove so awe-inspiring that normally it would make a man's hair stand up if he were not free from lust. When those cold wintry nights came during the 8 days interval of frost, I would dwell by night in the open and by day in the grove. In the last month of the hot season, I would dwell by day in the open and by night in the grove. And there came to me spontaneously this stanza never heard before. Chilled by night and scorched by day, alone in awe-inspiring groves, naked, no fire to sit beside, the sage yet pursues his quest. I would make my bed in the charnel ground with the bones of the dead for a pillow, and cowherd boys came up and spat on me, urinated on me, threw dirt on me, and poked sticks into my ears. Yet I do not recall that I ever aroused an evil mind of hate against them. Such was my abiding in equanimity. Sariputta, there are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this. Purification comes about through food. They say, let us live on kola fruits, and they eat kola fruits. They eat kola fruit powder, they drink kola fruit water, and they make many kinds of kola fruit concoctions. Now I recall having eaten a single kola fruit a day. Sariputta, you may think that the kola fruit was bigger at that time, yet you should not regard it so. The kola fruit was then, at most, the same size as now. Through feeding on a single kola fruit a day, My body reached a state of extreme emaciation. Because of eating so little, my limbs became like the jointed segments of vine stems or bamboo stems. Because of eating so little, my backside became like a camel's hoof. Because of eating so little, the projections on my spine stood forth like corded beads. Because of eating so little, my ribs jutted out as gaunt as the crazy rafters of an old roofless barn. Because of eating so little, the gleam of my eyes sank far down in their sockets, looking like a gleam of water which has sunk far down in a deep well. Because of eating so little, my scalp shriveled and withered as a green bitter gourd shrivels and withers in the wind and sun. Because of eating so little, my belly skin adhered to my backbone. Thus, if I touched my belly skin, I encountered my backbone, and if I touched my backbone, I encountered my belly skin. Because of eating so little, if I tried to ease my body by rubbing my limbs with my hands, the hair, rotted at its roots, fell from my body as I rubbed. Sariputta, there are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this: purification comes about through food. They say, let us live on beans. Let us live on sesamum. Let us live on rice. And they eat rice. They eat rice powder. They drink rice water. And they make various kinds of rice concoctions. Now I recall having eaten a single rice grain a day. Sariputta, you may think that rice grain was bigger at that time, yet you should not regard it so. The rice grain was then at the most the same size as now. Through feeding on a single rice grain a day, my body reached a state of extreme emaciation. Because of eating so little, I experienced all of those problems up to the hair rotted at its roots fell from my body as I rubbed. Yet, Sariputta, by such conduct, by such practice, by such performance of austerities, I did not attain any superhuman states, any distinction in knowledge and vision worthy of the noble ones. Why was that? Because I did not attain that noble wisdom, which, when attained, is noble and emancipating, and leads the one who practices, in accordance with it, to the complete destruction of suffering. Sariputta, there are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this: purification comes about through the round of rebirths. But it is impossible to find the realm in the round that I have not already passed through in this long journey, except for the gods of the pure abodes. And had I passed through the round as a god in the pure abodes, I would never have returned to this world. There are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrines and view is this: purification comes about through some particular kind of rebirth. But it is impossible to find a kind of rebirth that I have not been reborn in already in this long journey, except for the gods of the pure abodes. There are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this: purification comes about through some particular abode. But it is impossible to find the kind of abode that I have not already dwelt in, except for the gods of the pure abodes. There are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this: purification comes about through sacrifice. But it is impossible to find a kind of sacrifice that has not already been offered up by me in this long journey, when I was either a head-anointed noble king or a well-to-do Brahmin. There are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this. Purification comes about through fire worship, but it is impossible to find a kind of fire that has not already been worshipped by me in this long journey, when I was either a head-anointed noble king or a well-to-do Brahmin. Sariputta, there are certain recluses and Brahmins whose doctrine and view is this. As long as this good man is still young, a black-haired young man endowed with the blessing of youth, in the prime of life, so long is he perfect in his lucid wisdom. But when this good man is old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, and come to the last stage, being 80, 90, or 100 years old, then the lucidity of his wisdom is lost. But it should not be regarded so. I am now old, aged, burdened with years, advanced in life, and come to the last stage. My years have turned 80. Now suppose that I had 4 disciples with 100 years lifespan, perfect in mindfulness, retentiveness, memory, and lucidity of wisdom. Just as a skilled archer, trained, practiced, and tested, could easily shoot a light arrow across the shadow of a palm tree, suppose that they were even to that extent perfect in mindfulness, retentiveness, memory, and lucidity of wisdom. Suppose that they continuously asked me about the 4 foundations of mindfulness, and that I answered them when asked, and that they remembered each answer of mine, and never asked a subsidiary question, or paused except to eat, drink, consume food, taste, urinate, defecate, and rest in order to remove sleepiness and tiredness. Still, the Tathagata's exposition of the Dhamma, his explanations of factors of the Dhamma, and his replies to questions would not yet come to an end. But meanwhile, those 4 disciples of mine, with their 100 years lifespan, would have died at the end of those 100 years. Sariputta, even if you have to carry me about on a bed, still there will be no change in the lucidity of the Tathagata's wisdom. Rightly speaking, were it said of anyone, a being not subject to delusion has appeared in the world for the welfare and happiness of many, out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare and happiness of gods and humans, it is of me indeed that rightly speaking this should be said. Now on that occasion, the venerable Naga Samala was standing behind the Blessed One fanning him. Then he said to the Blessed One, "It is wonderful, venerable sir, it is marvelous. As I listened to this discourse on the Dhamma, the hairs of my body stood up. Venerable sir, what is the name of this discourse on the Dhamma?" "As to that, Naga Samala, you may remember this discourse on the Dhamma as the hair-raising discourse." That is what the Blessed One said. The venerable Naga Samala was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. End of Maha Sihanada Sutang.